So this book is actually called the Didache, and it means the teaching of the 12 apostles to the Gentiles. So this book talks a lot about Gentiles, but what it means by Gentiles, you know, people argue they're Jews, they're Gentiles. What it means is basically to people who have not been raised in Judaism. Some people say, I'm not a Gentile, I'm a Jew. I've got 3 drops of blood, of Jewish blood in my DNA. Okay, yeah, well, fine. But this is a book for people who have not been raised in Judaism, because the job of the apostles was to, like Yeshua said, go to all the world, make disciples of all nations. That's what it was. And they were going to people who, for them, just the idea, you have only one God? One God? You're very poor, you know? One God? For them, that was like... And on top of it, no image, no idol, no physical representation of that God. For them, it was like, oh boy, you know? Just that was a heavy concept. And there was moral restrictions. So the job of the apostle was really to teach these new disciples about the God of Israel and about the Torah. So, here, personally, I think everyone should get one of those. You know, they cost $35, but if we give them in bulk by 5, they cost $21. So if anyone's interested, if I can get 4 or 5 people interested, we can make an order of 5 for $21 each, and the shipping will be a lot cheaper, you know, and like this, you know. But we're going to go over.
We're going to be going through it together?
Yes, this is a plan that I'd really like to go through. You see, it's very interesting. I'm going to show why I think it's important, especially in our day. So I'm going to explain what it is, really. Is that in a few decades ago, maybe 100 years ago, they discovered this document called the Didache. The Didache means teaching. So, what it is, it's the document that the disciples of the masters used as a constitution to plant congregations. They would go, they put that together as their, the Didache itself is no bigger than the book of Galatians, very small, you know, but it's their rule book. Between themselves, they say, well, these are basically an essence of the teachings of the master, and this is what we need to present to congregations, to people, as we organize them into congregation. That's our constitution, that's our rule book. And what's really amazing is that when I compare what people think today is important for a messianic congregation and what is not important for a messianic congregation, it's totally reverse. Like, people put importance on calendar triviality, on doctrinal triviality, but the Didache is all about ethics. How to live together as decent human beings. You know, so I think that's important. It puts us back into focus. It puts back into focus what is important. Another reason why is because the time of the disciples was a time that they expected the return of the Lord to come quickly. So they were living in sort of an end time type of era, just like many of us feel today, whether it is true or not. Many of us feel, well, we're in the end time because this and that is happening, right? Well, if we are, maybe it's nice to really look deeply into what the first disciples thought was important for their congregations in their day. Does that make sense? I think there is a lot of good things to look at in there. So, and the way the book is, if you get the book, the way you, the way it's built is that the beginning starts by giving you the Didache itself in English and in Greek, Koine Greek, biblical Greek, not modern Greek. And then it gives you, then it divides it by chapters. You have the first chapter, you have a little, let me see, overview of the chapter, a little, something about the chapter. Then it gives you a commentary on the application of the chapter. And when I read it, I thought, this is amazing. This is so good. Like, you know me, I do not go around trying to promote, trying to make disputes about theology. I mostly talk about ethics, loving one another, forgiveness, helping one another, and all things like that. So basically, this is what it's all about. I would like to... The person who wrote this commentary, is called Toby Janicki. I know him personally. He's a very nice man. You know, he's a very nice man. He's married. He's got several children. Four? I think he's got four children.
Four, yes. Where does Toby live?
He used to live in Colorado, but now he lives in Minnesota.
In Hudson, Wisconsin.
So, and he's a very nice man. I met him several times. I went to one of his Bible studies in Colorado last year in Colorado, you know. And we met him also another year in Hudson, Wisconsin. So, and here is what he writes about, what he says it's about. He says, all disciples of Messiah have a choice, the way of life or the way of death. The book is called The Way of Life because the first verse says there is two ways. So we have a choice. Every day that we wake up, we have a choice in how we're going to live. A biblical worldview supports the fact that life is about choices. The path we choose each day will ultimately determine our destiny. Not only is life full of choices, but it is also a progressive journey that never stops. Biblical metaphors that speak of life as a way, path, a road, or a journey implies movement, the progress of time, and our daily freedom to choose. So that's important. The Didache is a manual to help believers in Messiah in making correct choices on the path of discipleship, our journey through life. It reminds us of Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference. That's a famous poem. When we find Yeshua and truly take up his cross daily, we certainly take the road less traveled. The themes of the two ways can be linked to the Master's words about the narrow path. He says, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. That's Matthew 7, 13, 14. So the whole time that we read, we make connections with what the Torah says and how Yeshua applied what the Torah says. There is little doubt that Yeshua drew upon the Torah itself in his teaching. Because even in Deuteronomy it says, Moses tells the people, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandment of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse, if you do not obey the commandment of the Lord your God. That was the parasha 2 weeks ago. Okay, so here I want to actually play you a couple of Toby Janicki's introduction to the Didiki. Here. Hope it's enough sound.
I think Tony Jones describes the Didache well when he says that it's the most important work you've never heard of. It's a short introductory work, no longer than the Book of Galatians, 16 chapters in length. It was written in the late first century. Some of its content may even be older than many of Paul's letters and the Gospel of John. Some scholars even take it...
Oh, sorry. Here we go.
...back to 50 Common Era. So it's a very early work. It's instructions that are written to new Gentile believers, introducing them to the faith. There's instructions on ethics, prayer... immersion, tithing, leadership structure. There's even a little bit about the end times. The title itself, the longer title, is Teaching to the Gentiles Through the 12 Apostles. It claims to actually go back to the apostles, resting on their authority. And it very well, in parts, could actually go back to the apostles, or at least to the time of the apostles around that time. It appears to be the outworkings of Acts 15, where, as we know, the Jerusalem Council ruled that Gentiles coming into faith, becoming a part of the kingdom of heaven, don't need to convert and become Jewish and thus obligated to the Torah in the same manner of Jews. But nevertheless, when we read the New Testament, we see that the Torah is still there for instruction for them. So the Didache really is kind of the outworkings of this. How does the Torah relate to Gentiles on a daily basis? It's an introduction to Torah living for new Gentile believers.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Where did they find it?
It's a Greek... guy who found it. It's written there. I read it somewhere. Rediscovery. I forgot. I know I read it and I didn't kind of retain it. But I can find you this.
It's been around for a long time.
Oh, yes. It was, like some people, like you say, it's dated all the way down to 50 BC. When the disciples, you know, the crucifixion was about 30 BC, no, 30 AD. And this is dated down to 50 AD. When the disciples were, and if you look at the book of Acts, okay, in the book of Acts, Paul had started going to Antioch and around the Aegean Sea. And the disciples were also going, helping him, starting to go around. Philip went to, there's one Philip the Deacon, he went to Turkey. The other Philip went to Ethiopia. Thomas went to India. They all went to different places where they were. And this became their constitution book. Putting things together. Got to realize the New Testament was not even written. You know, this is not a commentary of Christians who learn about, this is actually from the disciples themselves. And when it's been discovered, Christians have written commentaries on it that really Christian and Catholicized it, right? You know, we interpret things according to our own bias. And also traditional Jews wrote commentaries on it with their own bias. But the reason why this is very special, because it's the first one written according to its own bias, which was Messianic Judaism, Jews who believed in Messiah. You see, this is why this is kind of a commentary that brings its authentic, a more authentic value, you know. So, So, and I find you that answer. It's written in the book. So if you go to the website on it, there's everything on it. It's, you know, if you type DD key or you Google where it was, you'll find it, you know.
Okay. I didn't want to show all of them. I wanted to show this one. And you can see all of them yourself. Just have to go to the website.
Study the Didache in order to get a better idea about what faith and Messiah originally look like. In the first section of the Didache, there's a heavy focus on ethical teachings, on ethics. In Judaism, this is known as Musar. And this section draws heavily from Yeshua's words and relates them in a systematic fashion that details what sacrificial kingdom living really should look like.
Now, and you'll notice that in the Didache again, there is really hardly anything on doctrines and some of the things that people think are so important today. People divide themselves over doctrines and stuff like that. It's all about ethics and lifestyle, which I totally agree with. For me, it's like even James, he said, true religion is visiting the widows and giving, you know, that's what he talked about.
Today, so many have lost the biblical love that they should have and this idea of laying down our life for others. You know, we don't have respect for teachers and authority figures like we should. These things need to be reiterated over and over. And the Didache teaches all these things in an authentic messianic Jewish context. Additionally, you know, spiritual disciplines that the Didache mentioned, things like set time prayer, fasting, and liturgy, all of these have been all but lost amongst most believers today. This is especially true for us as who grew up in evangelical churches. We often viewed these spiritual disciplines as part of a works-based righteousness or dead works. Yet, it's evident that we really do need these disciplines back in our lives today. These disciplines, they help us stay holy and set apart for Hashem. These practices were inherited from Judaism, and the Didache takes them and adapts them specifically for Gentile believers. When reading the Didache, it's apparent that many of the things that we think are so important were not that important.
So, now, he says it applies the teachings of the Torah to Gentile believers. Why does it need to be applied and adapted? Why would we need to apply and adapt it?
Because we didn't grow up observing those things, we need to learn it.
Yes, for a child, if I tell a Jewish child, eat anything that you find in the store, he knows what he's going to choose, and the rest is not food. You know, because for him it's natural. But those who have not been raised into that, they don't know. So there is a real cultural thing.
I thought of a good example of that is learning a language. You don't teach somebody learning a second language like English the same way you teach your natural children.
Yeah.
Because your natural children, they grew up with it, and you teach them and you say, stop, don't do this, no, yes, and they copy you. But when you teach a child and he's in first or second or third grade, you have to start out by teaching him different, even sometimes the grammar.
Yeah.
And the verb conjugation and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So that's very important to... That's the point he's making. The Torah is something very foreign to all these pagans around the world. What, you don't offer a little girl for sacrifice? What else do you offer? it's like...
To the early believers. And likewise, so many of the things that we don't see as important anymore were central to the early believing community. The Didache helps us get our priorities back. It helps the reader get their sense of direction back to the priorities of Rabbi Yeshua and the apostles. It presents these instructions in a practical and accessible way that help live out daily faith in Messiah.
Okay, so there is one more I want to show. I think he makes a very nice presentation of the DDK, so I thought I'd let him do it.
There's a heavy focus on ethical teachings, on ethics. In Judaism, this is known as Musar. And this section draws heavily from Yeshua's words and relates them in a systematic fashion that details what sacrificial kingdom living really should look like. Today, many have lost the biblical
It's funny. You're right. Okay.
I mean, it's okay if you want to play again.
No, ethical guidebook. Okay, there is another one. The contents and origins. That's the one I wanted to do. Sorry. You were listening.
Tony Jones describes the Didache well when he says that it's the most important work you've never heard of.
Yeah.
It's
so we've seen all of them, I guess, right?
Work, no longer than the Book of Galatians.
I probably did show all of them. Okay, the three of them I wanted to show.
Were there just three?
Yeah, I wanted to show. There is five of them, but I wanted to at least show this three. The other ones are good, you know, you can watch them yourself. So basically that's the introduction. So what I'd like to do is eventually be nice if we love our book, if we all love our book. But I'm going to read the first chapter just without stopping. It's not very long. And then we'll see how we go. I'll read it in English, not in Greek. Is that okay? Okay. 16 verses. So here is the first chapter of the Didache. And some of the things that are in there will look very familiar. And we got to remember the people who wrote this were the disciples of Yeshua. And this is chapter 1. There are two ways, one of life and one of death. However, there is a great difference between the two ways. Now, the way of life is this. First, you shall love God who made you. Second, you shall love your fellow as yourself. That's the way of life. Whatever you do not want to happen to you, do not do to one another. This is the teaching about these matters. Speak well of those who speak ill of you. Pray for your enemies. Fast for those who persecute you. For what special favor do you merit if you love those who love you? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? However, you are to love those who hate you, and you will not have any enemies. Wow. Restrain yourself from natural and physical inclinations. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other to him, and you will be complete. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. If someone takes away your cloak, give him your tunic also. If someone takes away what is yours, do not demand it back, for you are not even able to get it back. Give to whoever asks,
and do not demand it back. For the Father wants to give his own gifts to everyone. Contentment awaits one who gives according to the commandment, for he is blameless. How terrible for one who takes! For anyone who has a need and takes will be blameless, but one who does not have a need will give an account as to why he took it and for what purpose. And when he is put into prison, he will be questioned thoroughly about what he has done, and he will not get out from there until he has paid the last penny. But regarding that it has also been said, let your donation sweat in your hand until you know to whom to give it. So that's the chapter. That's the chapter. So a lot of these verses seem narration of the things Yeshua said. So we got to remember. To me, I always like to remember the context here. Is that, let's say today I want to establish Messianic congregation. Okay? A congregation, any congregation, Christian, Jewish, whatever. We'll have to establish a statement of faith, which to me, I don't believe in statements of faith. Statement of faith means you understood the mind of God, which we can't. We can estimate and say, according to what I feel, that's what I would like to do. But really, no more than that. Everybody has a statement. You know, most congregations, they have a place. We want to do exactly like the disciples used to do. And they all live differently, and they all claim they do what the disciples used to do. You know, we want to be like the early. And they all do different, and they claim they are like the early congregation. You know, so because we don't really understand. So, but we would have to have a statement of faith, organization for leadership. We would have all kinds of certain views about prophecy, baptism, and stuff like that. That would be kind of some of the pillars of an organization. But these people, they did not need that, because the whole structure that they adopted was already made. It was a synagogue structure. So, but as they came to the congregations who were not used to synagogue, the Jewish believers, when they made their congregation, they took the same structure of the congregations, of the synagogues. They didn't need to change very much. But the new believers, the people who were not Jewish, they didn't know about all that. So they needed that teaching. They need to know. But what did the disciples chose to teach them as the first elementary of what is the way of life? All these things from Yeshua about love, forgiveness, retaliation, non-retaliation, and all these things that he talked about. So I think it's pretty important that I think they felt those things are the important things for a congregation. So here what I did, I put together here a list that, and I'm not the one who did that. Actually, if you read the book, when you get to chapter 1, you see, I'm going to try to show it to you. You see, first of all, in the beginning, you have the DDK itself, all of it, and you see, it's not very long, and it's written in both Greek and English. You know, so it's not very long. And then you have chapter 1, and gives you the first chapter of the DDK, 6 verses. Some verses are pretty long, you know. And then there is an overview, and I'll let you read that when you get your book, right? And then ethics versus theology. But what it's going to do, it's going to give
a little there. With each verse, there is a little footnotes that appear here, and those are biblical footnotes that shows where it comes from, what they're teaching. And the footnotes mostly start with, for each verse, start with the Tanakh, because it's important to realize that Messianism, or even Christianity, was not a Christian idea. It was a Jewish idea. It's birthed in the Tanakh. Oh, love one another, that comes from the Tanakh. Turn the other cheek, that comes from the Tanakh. All from there. You know, so that's what I want us to go through. I don't know how many we're going to go through. We'll take our time, okay? And really, if you have, as we talk, we have a question. I really don't mind as a question. You know, it's like, I think it's important to me. For 3-4 years now, on my weekly newsletter, and even in our Shabbat teaching together, I've been talking about ethics. And now I see this and I feel, wow, this was the most important thing for the disciples to show, to teach these Gentiles to whom they introduced to Torah, ethics. And to be honest, as I look at what's going on today in religion in general, I think that's the most important. I was having a discussion with somebody not long ago. He's a leader at a Messianic congregation in the area, a big one, one of the most established ones. And he asked me, he told me, I would like to recollect the conversation pretty correctly. He was complaining that he wanted to not have to work so he could devote himself more to Torah study, because I give him Hebrew class, and as we do Hebrew classes, we do Torah study. So he was complaining that he had to do that, and he wanted to quit his job, he didn't want to slave to the system, and blah blah blah. So I say, he's telling me because he's asking me my advice, you know. So I says, well, I don't know about you, but you know, to work for a living is a commandment. I say, yes, when he says about the Shabbat, it says, 6 days you shall do your work, 7 days you shall rest. So basically, to work for a living is a commandment. People forget that one. They say, 7 days you shall rest. I remember that one, you know, but 6 days you shall work. You know, it's a commandment. It's healthy to work. It's healthy to get up and feel like you've earned something, you know, to take care of yourself, to take care of your family, to take care. It's always explaining. It's a good thing. I said, told him, even in Judaism, a rabbi usually works. He's not paid by the congregation. He works, and so a rabbi works hard actually, because even on Saturday, he's got to lead service and he's got to prepare it. But he works, maybe part time, you know, or whatever. He works, and it said, I read in the Talmud one time that it is not healthy for a man to be solely dedicated to spiritual activities. When a spiritual leader, a leader of a congregation, is solely devoted to spiritual activities, he goes on this plane of spirituality and he becomes irrelevant to his congregation, who are people who work for a living, who don't have the time, who by the time they come in the evening and they lay in bed and they take their Tanakh or something to read, they fall asleep after 3 sentences, you know, because they're so tired. You know, but a rabbi who doesn't go through that, he's irrelevant to his congregation. He doesn't understand that. So it's a false balance. All spiritual and no physical, and all physical and no spiritual, those are called false balances. We've got to have a healthy meal. So I told him that. He said, ah. Then he was talking about, don't want to be slave to the system. I said, you know, we're taught that, you know what it says about slaves in the Bible? He says, what? I says, it says, slaves, obey your masters. Good ones and bad ones alike. You know, he says, obey your master. And he says, not only in front of them, but even in their absence, and serve them as you would the Lord. And then I told him, well, you know, if the American, he's a teacher. So basically,
is a civil servant. He teaches in public school. So he's a American government employee. So say, and if the American government be your master, so be it. That's what it says in the Torah about your situation. He looked at me and just, but that's sometimes not good. That makes me forsake. Then he said something about having to forsake some of his ideals and some of his ideas and the thing he wants to do. Then I said, well, you know what Yeshua said about discipleship. He said, he that forsake not all that he has cannot be my disciple. And he looked at me. You know, he looked at me and he said, but that's totally anti-American. It's like, he said, that's not at all the idea of the American dream. I said, yes, I know, I understand that it's not. It's totally against the values of capitalism. But that's what he said, don't blame me. You know? So basically, we have a little bit of an idea of the Torah that's sometimes affected by our culture. And it was the same in those days of the Greeks. You know? So we need to really reestablish the Torah and the words of the Master and the words of... the Master says, we shall be like priests, a royal priesthood. Well, when he talks priesthood, he's not talking like the priests maybe of the Vatican's, dressed in purple and, you know. He's talking the Levitical priests who were not given any land, who've lived on the people's charity, basically, because their job was to teach them Torah. And if a priest did a good job, people showed their thankfulness. But if they didn't do a good job, you know. So it's really a... It's really important to remember all that. So here they were teaching that. So I put here all these verses that go along with this thing. And here in the book, there is a commentary that goes into the origins of some of those teachings, and I won't go through the whole thing, I'm not ready to, and that would be too long, but I really do hope you get the book. You know, so the first verse is, and try to apply this to your life, and please, if you have questions, you know, I just want to show what this thing is about. The first verse is, there are two ways, one of life and one of death. We can see this in Deuteronomy. It says, with Moshe saying, look, I'm presenting you today with, on the one hand, life and good, and on the other, death and evil. So that's pretty much of a same presentation of the same God, who we're human beings and we have choices. And these choices can affect our lives. And we make every day, any minute of the day, we can rearrange our lives for the worst by making a decision to see somebody or not to see somebody. Making a decision to eat something we shouldn't eat or not eat it. To say something to somebody or not to say it. To go into a dangerous situation because we feel out of the faith for it. And go into an accident or to, you know, anything. Drink a couple of extra and then drive, you know, or to talk back to somebody, a wrong look to the next guy in the car, you know, or cutting in front of somebody, you know, road rage. I don't know. Any minute of the day we can rearrange our lives. So we do have choices every minute, being safe or unsafe on how we... You handle the baby,
in the way we react to spouses, children, neighbors, police officers, safety. We can burn our house down, just, you know, anything. We can rearrange our lives for the worst or for the better according to the choices we make. And we're really the masters of that. And Jeremiah also said the same thing in Jeremiah 21:8. He says, and there is what you are, this, and here is what you are to tell this people. This people was Israel. Look, Adonai says, look, I am presenting you with the way of life and the way of death. Jeremiah 21:8. And in this case, the way of life and the way of death was very simple. King Nebuchadnezzar was invading Israel. The way of life was to let him do it and not go to war against him. And the way of death was to raise an army and go fight against him. His message was highly unpopular. The message was of life was to allow Nebuchadnezzar to come conquer the country and become tributaries to Nebuchadnezzar. That means paying taxes. And he will establish a governor. The country would not have the right to have a king. They'd probably be able to continue their lives. The king didn't care what god people worship. As long as he got his taxes, that was it, you know. And all the way of death was to resist the Babylonian invasion and form an army and go against him. And go against Nebuchadnezzar, which they did. They made the wrong choice. This was what Jeremiah was saying. Put your neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and you shall live. Can you imagine him going to the king and saying, no, don't raise an army, you're going to lose, God's punishing you for your sin, so it's hopeless. They put him in jail. It's like, you know. So, and, you know, when you realize Israel had the choice, it's like Nineveh. Jonah went to Nineveh and he says, repent, or in 40 days, this and that. They repented and it never happened. You know, Yeshua said to Cain, and he said, the kingdom of God is at hand. Let's only change his message. He said, no, this and that, you shall be destroyed because you have not seen the day of your visitation. You know, there is two ways, the way of life and the way of death. In the case of Moses, was to live by Torah or not. In this case, was a very specific, in the case of Jeremiah, it was very specific. It was not just live by the Torah. It was specific. Don't go fight against the king of Babylon. Jeremiah calls Nebuchadnezzar God's servant to do God's will. God calls him in his prophet, my servant to do my will. And his will was to be a whip on Israel. And then Yeshua also says, go in through the narrow gate. For the during to, it's like this poem we read, the less traveled path. Go in through the narrow gate. For the gate that leads to destruction is wide, and the road broad, and many travel it. But it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few find it. I compare the walk of the believer to the salmon. See, I'm a true Oregon. I give salmonic allegories. The salmon swims against current back to its place of origin or something in order to lay eggs. We have to swim against current. You know, it says, Yeshua said, that is that which is highly popular among the world is detestable to God. You know, so this is a, and then he says, however, there's a difference between the two ways. Well, that's kind of a sensible. Now I'm reading from the Didikida. Now the way of life is this. The way of life is this. You shall love the Lord, you shall love God who made you. So we recognize you shall love God, okay? You know, Deuteronomy 6:5 says, you are to love Adonai your God with all your heart and your being and all your resources. 11:1 says, you are to love Adonai your God and always obey his commission, regulations, ruling, and mitzvot. And Yeshua even answered one of the disciples, one of the rulers of Israel, a teacher, you are to love Adonai your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. He said that's the highest, most commandments. So here in the Didache, they give the highest, the first commandment they give, you shall love God, and then they added, who made you? Well, for Greeks and Romans and idolaters, it was not a duh thing. They were being told, they were being taught about the God of Israel. It's the God of Israel who made everybody. We are debtors to our Creator. He gives his life. We are debtors to him. He knows the machine. It's like if I make a little robot, the robot is dependent on me. We're not robots, we are beings, but still, we got to recognize who made us, who created us, and who gave us life. And for the Gentiles, they needed to be told that. So that's why the wording is here. You are to love God who made you. And we, as I think often, we need to remember who made us. Who do we owe everything we have? To whom do we owe ourselves to? We may not like, it's like, you know, he's called our father, and sometimes our parents, we don't always agree with what they put upon us, but they're still our parents, and sometimes with our father, we don't always agree, but he sees the bigger picture. He sees the bigger picture. So he said, you are to love God who made you. So that's what they said was the first commandment of the way of life in the Didache. You have to love God who made you. And then he says the second, you shall love your fellow as yourself, which is I think I didn't write it in the right way here. Leviticus 19:18, which says, this is still verse 2, I didn't do it right. Don't take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people. Rather love your neighbor as yourself. I am Adonai. I mean, this is not something invented by the Christians. Love your neighbor as yourself. This comes from Leviticus. You know? And as hard as it was for people to apply that in the days of Yeshua, this is why Yeshua taught it. Yeshua reminded people of it. It was a reminder. It was in the Torah all along. And whereas it is difficult for people to do that today. I mean, look at this. You see, when he says, love your neighbor as yourself, this is the way it works in Judaism, you know. If I say, love your neighbor as yourself, you know that it comes from that verse before that says, don't take vengeance, bear a grudge against any of your people. You know it's connected. People did a lot of learning through memorization before. Today we feel we have it on a note, on the telephone, on a piece of paper, and we're okay. But before it was all by learning. And you learn the first and the last of every sentence, and you know the middle. It's like, that's how it worked. So he says, to not take vengeance, that's what it is to love your neighbor as yourself. You know, the way I look at it is like this. We always have two balances, two scales that we use. The scale that we use to judge others and the scale that we use to judge ourselves. You know, like for example, we see somebody who is stingy, who doesn't give very much. We say, well, they're stingy with money. But when we do the same thing,
we're actually good stewards of what God's given us. If somebody is clean, you see, they clean the house. We said they're obsessed with us. We're actually clean. You know, we are. Do you understand what I mean? Sometimes we have two separate judgments. You know, we. What's that?
Double standard.
Double standard. False balances. We judge ourselves charitably and others very harshly. You know, I have one eye that doesn't see very well. And there's actually a midrash that says we should all have two eyes, one good one and one bad one. You know, because this way we should look at others with the bad eye, the blurry one, so we don't see too much of their stuff. We should look at ourselves with a good one that is clearly, but unfortunately we do the opposite. We look at ourselves with a blurry one, and we look at others with a very. Actually, we enlarge it the way we look at others.
Yeah.
You know, it's like so, but it says, "Love your neighbor as yourself." This is actually from Leviticus 19:18. We won't go too long. We'll do another 5 minutes. Be done. And then he says, whatever you do not want to happen to you, do not do to others. Whatever you do not want to happen to you, do not do to others. Yeshua said it the opposite way. He said it.
Do
unto others what you would have them do unto you. You know. But here they said the opposite. Whatever you don't want people to do to you, don't do to others. And that actually, that statement comes from Rabbi Hillel, who was alive in the days of Yeshua. Yeshua kind of turned it a little bit, but it really means the same thing. You know. So they were basically teaching somebody something strong with Judaism. And here I have Matthew 7:12, Luke 6:31. Do I have it? Matthew 7:12. Oh, I don't have Matthew 7:12. But I have let's look at Matthew 7:12 here. Matthew 7:12, it will be, I think that's what it says, the same thing. Okay. It says, always treat others as you would like them to treat you. That sums up the teaching of the Torah and the prophet. So the disciples were really teaching Yeshua's version of the Torah to people. And that's really important. This is what we need to remember. To me, this is what it means to be a believer. You know, we've got too many congregations. When we see congregation, I personally do not judge by how many exact liturgy they have, or how much of this and that, the length of the tzitzit, the kippahs, whatever that. I personally judge it by the friendliness of the people. And usually, if the rabbi is friendly, the people are friendly. You know, if the rabbi is warm, the people are warm. You know, if the rabbi is a bit harsh, there's a bit of a coldness. You know, and it's judging by the relationship people have with each other, because this is really what makes us who we ought to be, the relationship we have with each other. And I want to end with the last part here, verse 2. It says, speak well of those who speak ill of you. Pray for your enemies. And when we're talking enemies here, was not like somebody, your neighbor who don't like you, that you let your dog poo on his lawn, you know, or somebody who maybe gypped you a little bit of money. Enemies were the Romans, the people who try to kill you. You know, it's like, he says, pray for your enemies. He didn't say pray against them, pray for them. You know. Fast for those who persecute you. And I know rabbinic stories about that, where people are challenged to really pray for those who do that. This is really intricate part of Judaism. For what special favor do you merit if you love those who love you? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Now he's when they're saying that to these Gentile believers, they're putting them in the flock of Israel. You see? However, you have to love those who hate you. It says, you are to love those who hate you, and you will not have any enemies. You are to love those who hate you, and you will have who hate you, and you will not have any enemies. And we can bring one verse here. You have heard our fathers were told, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Then you will become children of your Father in heaven. That's what makes us real children of God, so to speak. When we do that. I'm not teaching it. Yeshua is teaching that. Then you will become children of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun shine on the good and bad people alike. I used that verse in my chaplain devotional this week. It said, he makes his sun shine on good and bad people alike. He sends rain to the righteous and the unrighteous alike. Sometimes sun can be very good for growing crops, but sometimes too much of it can be bad. So sun, in some countries, people see sun as, oh, we need rain. Some people see, for people for in temperate weather, you know, rain, oh, rain, we're going to, but in some countries, like in Thailand, rain when the monsoon comes, everything's going to flood, you know. It's like people have different views of sun and rain, but he sends both, and whatever they bring, on the just, unjust, righteous, and unrighteous. You know. What reward do you get if you only love those who love you? Why? Even tax collectors do that. He's talking about Jewish tax collectors, who are the worst of the Jewish scum in those days, because they collaborate with the Romans to collect taxes. And not only do they collect Roman taxes, but their pay comes from whatever they can add to it. And that's what Zacchaeus was, a tax collector. Matthew was a tax collector. And you are friendly, and if you are friendly only to your friends, are you doing anything out of the ordinary? Even the Goyim do that. Goyim is non-Jews, Gentiles. Therefore be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. And if we don't agree with that, we have to remember that our relationship with God in the Brit has been called enmity. Enmity. We are enemies because of our sinfulness. So he's not asking us to do something that he's not willing to do himself. And to reconcile us with him, it caused his son. So it's really important. He says something, but the very nature of his commandment tell us about his properties. He loves his enemies, and Yeshua follows what the Father does, and we ought to do the same. I will stop it here for today.